This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my super special guest, the lovely Kerry O'Reilly. Welcome, Kerry.
Hello.
And for those of you that don't know, Kerry is the lovely smiley face that is behind Sea Pots at Wheelers Bay near Bonchurch. So she is the cook, she provides everything with your brother James, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And this is the beginning of your fourth season?
Yes, it is, yeah. Tomorrow we open.
Officially?
Officially, yeah.
Oh, I'll have to admit I have had a sneaky bacon sandwich up there, haven't I?
Yeah.
Sort of forced you to open on a slightly sunny day.
That was a good day, though.
It was.
Yeah, we were busy. And
yeah.
It was good practice as well.
Yeah, and I also thought, because you're on that footpath, aren't you, from Ventnor to Bonchurch, the kind of seawall path.
Yeah.
That people walking their dogs that perhaps didn't know you were there when you're shut in the winter thought, oh, there's two people up there really enjoying that bacon sandwich and that chocolate cake. So it would have, even if they just clocked it and remembered it to come back and bring friends or whatever. So being there is just a great thing, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have regular people?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, we do have quite a lot of regular people that come down. A lot of people have got holiday homes around the area, so they always pop in when they're back.
And you're very dog friendly down
there,
aren't
you?
Yeah, it's lovely. It's great to see them kind of just, the dogs arrive and they treat the place as their own, don't they?
Yeah.
And it's all outside, so it's all in the fresh air, so nobody's sort of cooped up with dogs. But that means you're very weather dependent there, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the trouble. And if the wind's in the wrong direction.
But on a beautiful day, there's no nicer place to be.
No, it's like the Mediterranean.
Oh, it's just stunning.
Yeah.
And last year, one of my most memorable times at the Sea Pot was the Round the Island Yacht Race.
Yes.
And I think we came in the morning thinking we'll sort of, you know, go somewhere else afterwards. We never left. We just stayed there, just ordering bacon sandwiches, cake, more bacon sandwiches, crab sandwiches. Friends joined us. Their dog joined us. It was lovely. It was really, and there was a lovely atmosphere up there, wasn't there? Because all the lifeboat crews were coming up and having cups of tea and sustenance. So it was very special.
Yeah, the Coast Guards are based there,
yeah.
So they love having the cafe there. So.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. So tell us. And I just have to tell the listeners, I'm sorry, you don't really want to hear this, but Kerry arrived, just my kind of guest, with a massive homemade, of course, chocolate cake. And all the other DJs here going absolutely mad. So Andy Knight had to come out and make a complete pig of himself and had a huge slice. Marco was very restrained, but I've left it outside. So I'm hoping when the show's over that there's still some left for me. Please, guys, don't eat it all. But I can vouch for that because I had a slice last time I came and it is just beautiful. And you do weird and wonderful ones, don't you? You do gin and tonic cake.
And a Pimm's cake. And
I've never heard of those before.
Earl Grey tea
came
cake.
Up that.
No, I just like experimenting with things. I used to be an absolute terrible baker. I was renowned
I don't believe
for it.
That.
Yeah, no, seriously. When I said I was going to do this, I had this dream of, I'm going to make tea and cake by the sea and life's going to be wonderful. Wonderful, and everyone sort of laughed and went, well, I tried your cake. I remember making a cake with my young nephew Dominic when he was little. I looked after him and we made a cake together and it was so dreadful. It was flat and crispy and it was bright purple and green, and his poor dad Simon came to pick him up and he had to eat some and he couldn't eat it. And I left it out in the garden and I thought, oh, the birds and the nature will eat it. And it stayed there for weeks.
Reminds me of that song, you know, someone left the cake out in the rain.
Yeah.
It's got this hideous image of this dripping green gunk. Like something out of a science fiction movie. Yeah. So what happened then?
So when I thought, right, this is really happening, I'm going to get just practicing. So I practiced and I messed about with different recipes and techniques. And then I hit the one that I stand by.
Okay.
And it was a good cake, and now I just play about with flavours and things like that and experiment with stuff.
So do you have any icons that you look up to? Mary Berry or Delia Smith?
Yeah, Mary, I think. And always love watching the Bake Off as well.
So what do you think of Noel Fielding and Sandy Toksvig taking over?
Yeah,
from
I think they'll be good. I'm pleased, actually, because I was a bit, I thought it was going to be ruined forever, but I think
he's certainly going to bring something new, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
But I've read an interview with Noel that he doesn't like food.
Oh.
He hates time and he hates food. There's a thought to wrestle with, isn't there? And I used to teach Noel years ago at college, and I don't remember seeing him eat.
Yeah, he's very thin, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a tall guy, but he gives the impression of being quite big and rangy, but he's not really.
Maybe that'll convert him. Maybe he'll suddenly succumb to the joy of cake.
Yes! So that would be a thing, wouldn't it? Yeah. That would be a happening.
Bring him down the sea pot.
Yes, definitely. So everybody that cooks, I mean, are you going to bring out a book, your own?
Yeah, I would love to one day, actually. Yeah, about the trials and the tribulations, setting the place up, and then some of our recipes. And my brother makes the best homemade soup, so he really is good at that.
Because it's you and your brother James,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Who head it up.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's both of you, sometimes it's one of you.
Yeah.
And it's, cause James is a real vibrant, big personality, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, it's great fun.
Yeah.
So he taught himself to cook, or?
Yeah, he did, actually. Yeah, he's very talented. He's always he does cooking at home. He's very good with his sauces and meat dishes. And
what's his signature? What you say, soup? Has he got signature soup?
All of them, really. He varies. He does the nice vegetable ones, and he doesn't like seafood, weirdly enough. Even though he's like the king of the crab sandwich, he doesn't like it. So he's going to start working on more seafood soups and things like that, because I think they'll go well there.
I think, like you were saying, it sounds idyllic to have a tea room, you know, cafe by the beach, all homemade on a sunny day. It sounds wonderful. But it must be incredible hard work.
Yes. Yeah, if I had a pound for everyone that said, I'd love a little business like this. I'd love this to be my office. And I thought that too before we started. But yeah, the baking, the shopping. Because we're down the bottom of the steps, and the gate's locked along the seafront for vehicles to get through. So we can't get anything delivered. So we need to either be running up the steps, meeting people in the car park, or picking it up ourselves. So there's that side of it that people don't see.
Oh, gosh,
don't
even think of it. Practicalities
that. So that's sort of difficult, and yeah.
And what about dealing, because obviously you like your baking and your cooking and creating, because it's a very creative thing, cooking, isn't
it? Yes, yeah.
Doing things differently, and putting your own little, like you say, your gin and tonic cake, and doing your Pim's cake. So they're your specialities, aren't they?
Yeah.
Doing things
with
a different twist. So that's the part of it I imagine you really love. What's it like then having to work with the general public? Couldn't always be a tricky one.
Yes, we love the public. Actually, I would say 99% of our customers, I think the hint of them walking actually along there, a certain person bothers to venture that way and see what's around the corner. Or let's see what's down those steps and discover us. But generally, they're lovely. And but you do get the odd one or two.
Yeah, I suppose that's just the nature of the beast, really, isn't it?
And we've got this book, and it's our book of stupidity, we call it. And
In there?
No, you're not in there.
It's my husband.
No.
He must be. He must have a whole book to himself.
No, no, you're not in there.
Yet.
Yeah, come up with something. We'll put you in the book. Yeah, that'll go in our cookbook if we ever do one.
So what does the book of stupidity hold?
People's silly questions. I made a Bailey's coffee cake once, and a chap said, oh, excuse me, does that mean that Bailey made the cake, or does it contain alcohol? Things like that. And then we had a very affected voiced lady come up, and on our board we call the bacon sandwich a bacon sarnie. It is what it is. It's a bacon sarnie as such. And she's like, excuse me, what is a bacon sarnie? What on God's earth is it? And we had to explain. And she's, ew.
So she'd got through life with never experiencing the joy, and especially the perfect joy of not only is it a bacon sandwich, which is just bliss in a mouthful, but by the sea.
By the sea.
I mean, what more could you ask? And made with your own fair hands.
Yeah, and we use proper butter. We have proper butter.
I know
in it
you
as
do,
well,
and it makes all the difference.
Yes.
And we parked in the car park above, up the top of the steps the other day, and my husband could actually smell the bacon cooking, and he was leaning over the railing. And I thought, you know, he's just going to go hurtling headfirst down that cliff. So eager was he to kind of get there. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, for goodness sake, you know, we're going to be there in like 2 minutes. So you don't have to kind of put your risk life and limb sniffing this bacon that's wafting on the air. But so tell me, how, because it was let's not beat about the bush. It was the public loo, wasn't it, there?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So how did it come about? How did this vision, this dream manifest?
Well, I was a teacher before this.
You weren't an ordinary teacher, though, were you?
No, I worked in prisons. I was a prison teacher for years. And then
More of that later,
yeah. And I left there and I was working with children. I worked at Smart Training and working with their teen groups that they're getting ready to do apprenticeships. They needed help with their maths, English and IT. Well, it was Children in Need Day and I was dressed up as a nun. Walking on a sponsored walk.
As you do. I love the way through you casually said that. I was dressed up as a nun on a sponsored walk.
Yeah, I went to Catholic school, so I think there's an issue there.
I went to Catholic school. Yeah. Knew we had something in common.
Yeah. And, walking through the streets of Newport with all these teenagers, some of them in stilettos. We're going for a hike all through Carisbrook Castle and all the lanes round, a 10-mile hike it was for children in need. And some of them were lagging behind, going in the shops, doing things like that. And it was quite stressful. And I looked in and we went past Gully Howard's office, and in the window there was another set of toilets behind the Spyglass in Ventnor.
Oh, I know the ones high up on that little
ridge.
Yeah,
and they were selling them. And I said to my colleague, I went, oh, I'd love to buy that and just make tea and cake at the sea. And then all this would be a horrible memory. And she said, well, go and see about it then. Why don't you? You know, and so I thought, I'm going to on my lunch break. And the chap in there, Gavin, said, no, that's all sold to the neighbour. But Wheeler's Bay is coming up next week. And I love Wheeler's Bay. I grew up in there. I used to live up in up the hill from there as a child. And when it was the old original bay, it was just a fantastic. And we always used to go down there, all the locals and all the local fishermen and things would be down there. And it was magical, and I just thought, oh yeah, that would just be so perfect if I could do it. A lot of competition. You had to put a sealed bid into the council.
That must be quite hairy.
Yeah, and you don't know what to say.
No.
Oh, I'm going to spend more money than I need to. Do I put it in? But they wanted to know the package. They wanted to know what your intention was with it, how much you were willing to pay, what it was generally your ideas and what you were going to do there. And put that in the October, didn't hear, and then just before Christmas, phone call, you've been the one that they've chosen.
Oh, wonderful.
So it was time to sort of, oh no, it's really happening, and get on with it, yeah.
So time to don your pinny. And get creaming your butter and sugar.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of work to do because we had rip out all the toilets, because all toilet traces have gone. Even the toilet we have down there is a brand new lovely one.
I can vouch for that.
Lots of work to be done on the place, and it took us about a year of doing that and waiting for planning. Even though the council had chosen it, we still had to go through planning. It had to go to planning committee because it was ex-council land.
Yeah.
And so it took about a year to get it up and going. And then all of a sudden we were open. And
brilliant. And what about the sort of whole technical things of ovens? You know, if they let you down, or, you know, your dishwasher breaks, or those kind of nightmares. How do you deal with something like that? Because, you know, it's a small business and you don't have that backup, do you, like you would in a sort of commercial, big restaurant kitchen, for example?
No, we don't. No, we just have to think on our feet. Our grill played up in the half-term holidays. We were, hang on, the microwave's a combination microwave. We try it in there, and we tried it, and it wasn't that good. Hang on, there's a frying pan in the back.
Yay.
Of the car. Well, let's cancel this. And you just have to think on your feet.
Yeah.
James and I are both good at doing that. We can just sort of think, let's do
that. That's great.
It doesn't faze you.
You're brother and sister, but you're a fantastic team, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
Were you always that good at getting on when you were kids?
No.
James, you're listening.
Well, no, there were three of us. We sadly lost our dad when we were children, so it was three of us. So it would either be...
So you, James and your mum.
Yeah, me and James would either fight, or then we'd gang up on mum. There was always, it was always two against one at some point.
Yeah, three is always an awkward number, isn't it?
So,
And how old were you when you lost your father?
I was 12, and James was six.
No, how did you cope with that?
Differently, very sort of, it was a difficult time. It was a real shock, and it was just before Christmas. It Christmas isn't the same anymore, ever. It was on the 21st of December, and we were all very, I don't want to do Christmas, don't want to think about it, even now. It's 30 years ago now, but and then once at 9 o'clock at the 21st goes, then we're all like, yay, Christmas the next day. Christmas.
And did your mum sort of move forward with you both, or did you all move together at the same time, or did it take a...
Yeah, mum was fantastic. She had to be mum and dad, really. Yes. And I don't think as children we gave her credit for that. You know, you, as an adult now, you think, oh, blimey, that must have been very difficult. But as a child, it's all a bit...
Yeah, but I don't, looking back, I don't think as a child you could possibly expect your younger self to have had that level of understanding.
No.
But like you say, it's good, and I'm sure now that you can really appreciate. And do you tell her? You kind of get it now and how tough it must have been.
Yeah.
Because not only she's grieving, she's got to kind of get back on her game, hasn't she? Because like you say, she's got two
young children.
So you were 12, and how old was James?
He was six.
Six, so he was just a little lad. But I'm sure your dad would be so proud of you both to see you there, you know, at the helm of Seaport.
Yeah, I think he would as well. And he used to always take us down the bay because he used to belong to the angling club there, and we used to go down to the fishing competitions.
What did he do?
Dad, he was a civil engineer. So
he wasn't in the catering line or anything like that?
No.
Did he like his food?
Yeah, he liked his bacon sarnies.
Yay!
Yeah.
You could call them Dad's bacon sarnies, couldn't you?
We could do, yeah. We've got Nanny's homemade lemonade.
Yeah, Dad's and, bacon sarnies.
Mother-in-law's quiche, so yeah, we could. Yeah, name them in honour of him.
Absolutely. Yeah, and everything you do just works there, doesn't it? I mean, like I said, I can vouch for it. I'm there most weekends if the sun's shining. But so much so, you were noted in Condé Nast Traveller, weren't you?
Yes.
The top. The creme de la creme.
Yeah, that was
foodie magazines.
Yeah, and really enough, and there's a thing about opportunity and luck in life, isn't there?
Indeed,
you always got to say about that. And there was one day, and we weren't sure on the weather, because we rely on the BBC wrongly. It's always wrong. And we look at it and we're, oh, how many staff, how much bread do we get, how much do we do? And this one day, it may or may not have been foggy. And we were like, oh, well, we'll go in anyway. And of course, all the fog descended, and we were just thinking, oh, let's go. And this woman came along, and she just ordered some cake and a coffee. And she sat down, and she said, oh, do you do lunch? And looked at the menu, oh, I'll be back. Anyway, she came back later with her daughter and had lunch. And it turned out she was Juliet Kinsman. She was a writer for Condé Nast. And she loved it, and she was doing a piece on the island and just sort of stumbled across us.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
That's so lovely. But, have you got that piece framed up on the wall?
You should have it.
Oh, definitely.
We haven't got much space, though.
No, but I get that. I get that blown up on a great massive poster outside. Yeah, because that's something. And you've also, when I check you out on TripAdvisor, you've got, I mean, I think you just got 5 stars, isn't it? That's it.
Yeah, we've had a couple of.
But by and large, people love you and they love what you do, don't they? So when you get up and it's a Saturday morning or the holidays and you go down there, do you skip down there? Is it sort of light in your light of heart and, you know?
Yeah, some days, and you think, oh, it's going to be hot, I'm scared, it's going to be hot and busy.
Hot and busy.
and then by sort of come August, there's sort of, oh, everything's aching.
Yes.
I'm getting on now, I'm in my mid-40s.
Because you don't sit down, do you? I mean, just stand and run and stand and run and cook.
And up and down the steps.
No, it's... How many... Well, I'm very glad you do. Thank you. Take this opportunity to thank you. How many do you see? How many covers have you got there?
We've got about 26 comfortably around the tables, but we've got extra chairs and we've got a lovely wall down there. It's nice to sit down on the wall and sheltered. And we've got some wall cushions.
Lovely cushions.
And sometimes when we've been really busy, there's people sort of taken cups of tea and sat down on the rocks or gone down for a paddle and things like that.
So, lovely.
Yeah, so that allows it to expand slightly, yeah.
So, what's your plans for this summer? Because, like you say, you're opening officially
tomorrow. Yes.
What time?
At 10 o'clock.
Okay. Form an orderly queue. So, anything new on the menu?
Nothing at the minute. We've had a trouble with our crab supply, so we might not have any crab for a couple of weeks. And okay. The poor fisherman had an issue with his boat engine.
Right.
It got flooded by the storms, and he's still waiting to sort of...
Oh, so that put the kibosh on that. But yeah. Lots of lovely other things.
So we're going to... Yeah, we were going to put back the regular menu. We do these deli boards and sandwiches and things like that. So we're going to hang fire and just come up with some specials until we can get our crab and everything back on. Yeah. Line properly, but he's promised us definitely by Easter.
Fantastic. Okay, so more of this. Oh, I'm loving this food chat. So more of this after the break. Thank you very much for listening, and please follow us on Twitter at Vectus Radio and on Facebook. Okay, so more gorgeous scrummy foodie chat after this break. Thank you.
Stay social and get in touch. It's / Vectus Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest, Kerry O'Reilly from the Seapot down at Wheelers Bay. Welcome back, Kerry.
Hello again.
Hello. So before the break, we were talking about scrummy cakes and the trials and tribulations and the joys of running a cafe on the seafront. And in the break, you were telling me that apparently it's haunted, that the Seapot is haunted.
Yes. Well, years ago, it was a cottage. So the actual outer stone walls, as you look at it, they were the walls of the original cottage that were there. Going well back. And there's lots of different stories you hear. It was an old man's fishing shed, and there was an old woman that lost someone and looked out to sea and mourned and things like that. So we're not sure, really. But weird things...
Like what?
When we first went in to build it, we had to take it all to pieces. It tried to kill us all. John, my other half, he was taking all these wood stud walls out, and he'd laid them down nicely, to all the nails pointing one way so no one would tread on them. And then he'd gone back in, and one of them had turned back off, and he'd straight the nail straight through his foot.
Oh, yeah. My word.
Yeah. So trip to A&E for that one. He was okay, luckily.
So how did you explain that it was all the work of a malevolent ghost?
Well, we didn't think that then. And then James, my brother, took a hammer down to take out one of them. There was a brick wall dividing the two ladies and gents' toilets.
Yeah.
And he took a hammer to it. And this hammer that's been perfectly fine for all these years, big lump hammer, the head came off it and went straight down on his knuckles and broke his knuckles.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and young friends of ours, their young son Charlie was down playing, and Steve was carpenter. He was doing a bit of work, and he was playing on his skateboard, and he came skating down and broke his arm.
Oh.
Yeah, and it all sort of happened over a few things of weeks, and we were sort of adding it up. And we had no electricity. It was sold without electricity. And Southern Electricity had given us a massive quote for the... and had to dig up all the seafront and everything. And I went to pull this bit of wall off, and there was a unit there with electricity, and bolts of electricity went flying. And so, I wasn't killed, but, it made my hair that little bit more crazy.
But you still work there. You stuck with it for
that was that time. And then things would move, and we'd come in the morning, I never left that, where's that gone? Things would disappear, and things would fly off shelves and whack us and things like that. And the local vicar comes down, he's partial to a bit of cake and a cappuccino. And James, my brother, was chatting to him about it. And he said, well, yeah, I can. He sort of said about, maybe exercise it.
Yeah.
And he said, well, no, have you tried talking to the spirit? And we sort of don't know about that, and then one day something flew off a shelf, so we did, we had a good chat to it, and it seems a whole nicer place now. I think this whatever's there is still there, but it's accepted us now.
Yeah, perhaps just wanted to get your attention.
Yeah, maybe.
And now you've, like he said, had a little chat with it, and you're there, you've accepted that he's the spirit is part of the fabric of the place.
Yeah, perhaps. We did threaten it with an exorcism.
Okay, so that could have done it.
Yeah, and we don't know which way you'll go, up or down, depending on that. So we suggest you work with us.
Oh, some tough love.
Yeah, tough love.
Tough love for the spirit world.
Who knows? It could
just
be.
So you showed you weren't frightened of it.
We did.
Which is always a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And sometimes acknowledging them, people say, is a good thing, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really had too many you know, dabbed.
No, I'm not.
I'm not one of these people that they say you've got to be receptive to it. I don't think I particularly am.
No, I mean, it could just be a terrible coincidence and we're terrible builders and careless. And it could be that we're really small and everything's all loaded in too much.
Well, there is that, yeah.
There is that, but yeah, we're open on that one.
But well, there's a lot of them on the island, aren't there?
Yes.
You know, it's one of the most haunted places, isn't it, in the country?
Yeah, especially Bonchurch, isn't it? They say about ley lines and things in Bonchurch. So we're near there with... Just fall short of the Bonchurch postcode, so perhaps.
And because you're an island girl, aren't you?
Yes.
So you know all these stories, presumably.
Yeah.
And the one that I hear most of is Knighton Gorges, but that's where all the mist gathers, isn't it, down there in that valley?
Yeah.
And you could imagine, you know, and at night when you drive around and there's no street lights.
Yeah, it's quite.
It does get the old imagination going, and you'll see a bat suddenly swoop up or an owl, and so the scene is set, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And you've usually got a wonderful moon as well, often reflecting down into the sea. So it's all very sort of Hollywood ghost, isn't it?
Yeah, we grew up on the Botanic Gardens. That was always the old hospital that's meant to be haunted.
Yes.
We used to go out there as teenagers and scare ourselves witless and things like that. Yeah.
There is a story you told, I don't know if you want to retell it on air, but you were mentioning last time we spoke about you driving a bus when you were a schoolgirl.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you shouldn't have been behind the wheel. So tell us what happened.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't personally driving the bus.
Of course
I
you were.
No,
we weren't suggesting you were.
No, in the old bus station in Bentley, bored teenagers sat on it because it was cold and wet and there was nothing for us to do. One of us pushed the button and it started and moved. So it moved a few inches down the slope in the old bus station.
Right.
So in our wisdom, we thought...
We'll keep going.
Well, we can't get it to go backwards. How did we make that? We can make it go forwards, but we can't get it to go backwards. Well, let's drive it round and try and stop it where we found it. That's what we'll do. Of course, that's silly, wasn't it?
How many of you were there thinking along these brilliant lines?
About 12 of us.
Weren't you sort of in fear of your own life or that of other people?
No, it was going about 2 miles an hour and kangarooing and, it wasn't. And it was at night and everyone was asleep, really.
So
apart from the local policeman.
How did this sorry tale end?
Well, the local policeman wasn't asleep. He was doing his rounds.
He was
and,
on it?
Yeah. And caught us.
Any kind of consequences to that?
Yeah, very bad shouting at from the superintendent.
Did you have to go to the station?
Yes, with my mum. And it all started off very sort of, this is your mum. And then all of a sudden, a tiny little man as well. And I thought, oh, this is going to be okay. He seems quite nice and he was all very nice. And then he shouted. It still scares me now.
Really?
Yes.
Did you ever see him afterwards?
No.
But you did go on to teach in prisons, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
So didn't put you off the law entirely?
No.
So tell us about that. What did you teach? Why did you decide to teach in prisons?
Well, again, it's a sort of life and opportunity, really. My whole life's just been one, oh, look at that, I'll do that. I went to do a work holiday in Australia for a year. I absolutely loved Australia and wanted to live there. And I looked at the skills, occupation list that they required, and they wanted teachers, things like that. And I thought, right, that's it. I'm going to go back to uni and do teacher training. And we would do it. And as that would happen, a job came up at the prisons. They wanted just sessional cover to fill in for holidays and things like that. So I applied. And they said they would be willing to put you through the teacher training as well. So it was perfect opportunity. But a really interesting place to work and some great, great colleagues to work with up there.
So how long were you doing that for?
I was about 10 years.
So you must have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
What did you like about it the most?
Hopefully making a difference. I mean...
And what was the sort of singular one where you thought, yeah, really, I have got through to you?
It was a very small percent, I would have to say, because a lot of people are there for a lot of reasons. A lot of people are there for economic reasons, and that's never going to change with all the will in the world. They've got their certificate in English, but they're still going to go back to poverty and no job experience and a criminal record. So that's never going to change them. But some of them were inspired to go onwards, and we used to go all the way. We used to do open university courses up there. And some of them got degrees and things like that, and that was wonderful to...
That must have been really amazing
for
you.
Yeah.
And them.
Yeah, and
indeed.
Them.
Yeah. So did you have, what was your kind of most disturbing moment?
What in the...
Mm-hmm. I suppose you're never, presumably you're never alone with a class or...
Yeah, you used to be, and then you'd have officers patrolling.
Yeah.
And you'd have alarms and things on the walls.
But did you have any times when you thought, oh, no, I really can't do this anymore because today really freaked me out? Did you have any of those times?
Yeah, a couple of times. But I think gallows humour in the staff room and...
Yeah.
And that would get you through. But, yeah, generally it was, you know, they wanted to learn in education. They liked the opportunity. And once they realised it wasn't like their old school experiences, it was generally a good... Yeah, it was like being in any other classroom, really.
Yeah, and yeah. Is it something you would encourage, you know, because obviously you've got a lot of people on the island with those kind of teaching skills and people skills and a lot of knowledge that they'd be really happy to impart for that. Is it something you'd recommend to most people? Do you think you've got to be a particular kind of person to do that kind of work?
Yeah, I think you have. I mean, some people just couldn't cope with the being shut in. I remember taking someone up, they were coming up for an interview and they just saw the bars and the wires and the fences and the gates and just went, get me out of here, I can't cope. That's before they even saw a prisoner. And then other people just... Yeah,
it is. That's something I hadn't even considered, that feeling of being shut in.
So you're shut in, you may get keys, but you're still shut in. Mm. You have to stay there and
Yeah.
And you've got bars on your windows that you're looking out of.
And you're in that environment, aren't you? Your experience, so it's very different to standing like you are now, looking out of your hatch and the beautiful vista that you've got.
Yeah,
very...
I never take that for granted. No. I never do. And there's always something different going on with the sea or whatever's out there. And and I do think this is much better than looking at the bars and the pigeons and the bricks.
Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. And are any of your former pupils sort of out now? Do you kind of keep in touch and know what they've done with that knowledge that you gave?
No, not really, because generally we were Parkhurst, so most of them are from the mainland and they'd all go back and...
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few that were on remand that you see out and about, but they weren't ever there that long.
So if there's a teacher that thinks, oh, you know, I could do... What extra quality do you think they need that's different from, say, working in a secondary school?
Understanding, and we always used to have a saying there, but for the grace of God we go, because some people would just one stupid mistake and they were in there. Some people just generally were awful and monsters, you know, but generally most people were decent and they'd found themselves in the wrong.
Yeah, and like you've been saying throughout the interview about sort of luck and opportunity, that on a positive side,
yes,
that can equally work for people on the negative side. So it's all bad luck and lack of opportunity.
Can
I know everybody has choices, but sometimes those things can conspire against, and people land up making the wrong decision, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just being in the wrong place at the wrong time and it all goes pear-shaped. So going back to, because you wanted to be a lawyer at
years ago when I was young, yes.
So you got this little thread of the law kind of, I think you're always trying to make up for that terrible episode
with
the bus.
It's atonement, I think.
Yes.
I should join the police force next. And then come up, full circle.
So a dream to be a lawyer, what happened with that?
Just difficult, really. I say, we'd come from a single parent family. Daddy wasn't a lawyer and I was a female, and it was the 90s. And
did you really feel that was working against you even then in the 90s?
Yeah. There was a certain...
And was it just a feeling that girls didn't go into that profession, or was it something...
Generally, or you're wasting your time doing all this work and then you're just going to have babies and...
Who was saying that to you?
Just general, the vibe. The industry, the vibe.
So how far down that road did you go?
Not too far down it. I just went and sort of looked, and then the other people on the course and things. I just didn't. So I dropped out and became just did a bit of waitressing for a little while instead. And then, life then changed. And
but if you could turn back the clock, would you have it any other way?
No, probably not. No.
So when you're not Kerry... sort of serving up your dad's bacon sandwiches and your lovely gin and tonic cake by the sea on a sunny day. What do you do when we're not in season and when you're closed?
So in the winter. So I dream of living in the Caribbean for the winter, but that never happens. We need to paint the seapot because it's at the mercy of the sea and the elements. There's lots of work to do down there. I've got two big silly dogs that take up a lot of my time, and just catching up with friends and family because nobody sees me all summer.
Of course, so it's kind of all or nothing, isn't it, I suppose, in that sense. But like you say, there's all that unseen work to be done, isn't
there?
And in Australia, was that somewhere where your love of food grew? Because they have fantastic cuisine out there, don't
they? Absolutely, yeah. They're very multicultural and they have cuisine from everywhere. Yeah, definitely, definitely inspired. And I've travelled to quite a few other places as well and sort of take inspiration for that.
And you were telling me before we came on air that, as well as the bar work, you were a Jiffy girl, which I've never, something I've never heard of.
Australia, there was a company called Jiffy Foods, and they used to have vans, and they used to send girly girls. I was younger then, I was in my 20s, a long blonde hair, and much thinner. And they'd send you around in trucks to building sites, and you would sell sort of papers and sandwiches and hot pies and things like that. So I did that for a few months, because you can only work for 12 weeks in any one job.
So, did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it was stressful finding myself around and obviously driving this big lorry thing. I'd never driven anything like that before.
So is it the sort of size that in this country would require an HGV licence?
Possibly, yeah. Not too big, but it was big enough for me. And it had a stick shift with the gears on the
proper
hand. Yeah, proper. And so I was like, could we hear crunching gears going down the road and trying to find my way and ending up late to places because I spent too much time talking. It's like that. Yeah, but it was interesting, and I met some good friends there, and
And so the Aussie guys, how did they relate to you back then? And so that was in the...
Were really sweet. It was the other women that worked there. They were a baptism of fire.
Sadly, that can often be the way.
Some of them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So did they resent you because you were young and pretty, or they just saw you as a rival?
They thought I was posh because I was from England and all the rest of it, and they were a bit like that, really.
So you had a little bit of bullying?
Little bit, yeah. Yeah.
But on the whole, I mean, did you sort of embrace that real outdoor lifestyle?
Yeah, it was great because I started early and then I was finished by 2, so I had time just to get on the beach and that, because... Where it's near the sort of equator there, you don't get the light evenings in the summer. I was in Western Australia, so it's dark at 6:30.
You don't think of that, actually, do you?
No, but it's light at about 2 in the morning.
Handy.
They don't have daylight savings because the cows don't milk properly or something. I don't know quite how that works, because that just happens, doesn't it? But yeah, there's some reason why they don't out there. But it was great because I used to get home at 2 and then have time.
So it sounds like it's the sort of job and the sort of place that gave you a lot of life skills, even if it wasn't laugh a minute all the time.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, if
yeah.
you can drive a truck like that as a young woman in a foreign country, do they drive on the same side of the road? So that must have helped a bit. But even so, I mean, that's quite an undertaking, isn't it? And you're not just driving for pleasure, you were driving for work. You had to be somewhere at a certain time. And no sat-navs in those days.
No sat-navs. There, you had this big book of the UBD, it was called, and it had a big book of maps. And I used to sit there and look at the maps, where am I going today? And
I love a map.
Yeah, it's good. And because it's modern out there, it's a bit like Milton Keynes. Mm. It's all crisscrossed.
Oh,
so
I see.
It wouldn't be like if you did it here. Of all the twisty little roads and lanes and roads to nowhere that we have.
I think you know where you are. Well, literally, you know where you are with a map, don't you, in every sense of the word?
Mm.
And there's something you could look at and twist. And I know people read them upside down, like Doug did when we went to Paris. And we nearly missed the Eurostar. Read the whole thing upside down for the entire day. But I didn't even know that was possible, but there you go, it is. I was looking on my phone yesterday and we were trying to get to a tea room, funnily enough, in Brighton. And I was doing that thing, you know, where you just pump in the name of where you've been, and we'd been on the I-360, and you just pump that in and it comes up and it's like a miracle, you know. And then I put in the name of the tea room and it said 3 minutes. I thought, great. And the 3 minutes was then becoming 5 minutes, was becoming 7 minutes, coming eventually became 9 minutes, and it was very hot and I was getting very bothered, and obviously I wanted my cake, so I was getting quite nasty by this point. And then I realised what I'd done. I thought, how can this keep going up? Either we're going in complete wrong direction or I've done something wrong myself. And I pressed the car thing, so it was taking me around a one way as if I was a car, when actually we were on foot, so we could have just walked straight up. I thought, if I'd had a map, that wouldn't have kind of happened, would it? It was just I was relying on this technology to be dictated to by this machine that I had misfed the information in. So, yes, it was my fault, but oh, dear. So I was really glad when I got there. And they had two hammock seats, which I've never seen. So they weren't like the ones you lay in. You sit in them. And they were lovely in this tiny garden, little patio garden. And I sat in it. I was brilliant. And then if you don't sit dead centre, you land up kind of on the floor, because it all the whole thing sort of collapses off the bit of wood that it finds. But anyway, I managed to eat the cake, which obviously was the main thing as far as I was concerned. But what advice would you give somebody that's listening and thinking, oh, I've always had the same dream as Kerry, I'd love a little tea room on the island and bake homemade cakes, it's all going to be lovely, whether it's by the sea or not, because there's obviously limited venues by the sea.
Yeah,
but what,
yeah,
what would you say to them?
Go for it. It is good fun and all the rest of it, but be prepared that baking the cakes is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
you know, you need supplies to bake the cakes and equipment to make them in and customers to buy them.
Yeah, and customers to buy them.
Yeah,
that's really...
and then to do the books after they've bought them and so
that's
so
another
on and so on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't end with the buttercream icing and the cherry on the top.
No. But yeah, love doing it. And I say we're going into year four now, so
you're doing a lot right, aren't you? You're doing everything right. So you were also saying that you bake cakes for functions and birthdays. So if anybody wants a smashing cake, you'll just get hold of you on your Facebook page?
Yeah, on our Facebook page, or give us a call. Our number's on the page.
Yeah, I can personally vouch you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, they're not... Don't think, oh, they're going to be all the wonderful with their marzipan decorations and things like that. They are generally your standard sponge, but I play with the flavours and...
They taste out of this world. And for me, you know, I love a cake that looks homemade. I'd much rather have a beautiful homemade looking cake that tasted fabulous than one that was all bells and whistles and was quite, you know, kind of didn't have the flavour that yours had, for example, and that lovely homemade, that beautiful, beautiful feel. Now, you know what I'm going to ask you, because this show is called Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls. And you've done the first two, admirably.
Yeah.
But we need the pratfall bit now, Kerry. What's been your kind of pratfall moment as one of the proprietors of the Seapot?
There are quite a few. Let's start from... There's some I can't mention, obviously.
Fair enough.
And there's some that... Yeah, there's a time that I'm often caught singing and dancing and moonwalking across the kitchen.
Well, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you haven't seen that, no. Well, we're either busy, really busy. It's a weird place, because where we are and we are, there's no one there. And people walk by and go, oh, no one's in there, let's not go. And then everyone arrives, and everyone arrives together. So we're either standing there with twiddling our thumbs,
or moonwalking
and singing and doing silly things, and then people come and catch us out. So that's one. Another one was when somebody had ordered a cake for their day, maybe bringing the family down for birthday, and they'd ordered a strawberries and cream cake, and we were really busy, we were really rushed in the kitchen. I was like, oh, the cake, yeah, let's get that together, let's get the candles on. As I was getting out the tin, I sort of skidded and the cake went up in the air, managed to catch it, but it all, the top just all crumbled and it disintegrated. And
so this is actually
mess.
in the moment,
just ready
moment.
To have the candles on and everyone waiting to sing and all the rest of it. And oh, what do we do? And I thought, luckily I've got some meringues that actually weren't for the Seapot, they were my own. I was gonna have them for my pudding. So I got them and I mixed up some whipped cream and made them into and called the cake the Seapot Mess Cake, based on Eton Mess.
Yeah.
And the people thought it was fabulous and didn't know. So I'm really sorry about your mum's cake.
but it was gorgeous, because there's something magical about that meringue mix with cake, isn't it, and cream. It's a joyful marriage,
yes,
I find.
Yeah.
definitely.
Yeah.
And what is your own, I mean, presumably you eat cake as well. You're not somebody who just makes it.
Yeah, I don't so much in the summer. I'd like to go and sample cake at other establishments in the winter.
But what's your, of the ones you make yourself, which is your favourite?
I don't think you could beat the strawberries and cream one. It's just summer and it's wonderful.
But, yes, that is lovely. And of your savouries, what's your go-to one on the menu?
Fisherman's board, definitely.
Really? So yeah. What's that?
Salmon pate. We make our own salmon pate and crab and prawns, salad and crusty bread.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
Yeah.
I can remember having two of our closest and dearest friends came down and it was his birthday and we thought we'll take them to the Seapot because it's one of our favourite places and they'll love it because he's actually a chef in London. And we got down there, and though they're two of our, like I said, dearest and loveliest friends, we didn't know he was allergic to seafood. So we were going to sort of give him, you know, the lobster platter, like, and just do it all, you know, and he couldn't eat it. So he landed up having the cheese, which was lovely, but, you know, for the birthday surprise, it wasn't quite what we had in mind. But that's just life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just the way it goes. But he had a, you know, he was really taken with it. And of course, it's somewhere to really kick back and just relax, isn't it? It's,
yeah, yeah.
And watch the world go by.
Yeah, because we have no cars down there,
no.
The odd one going by, but yeah, we're pretty much...
It's just people with their dogs or people wandering by with children. It's just, it is idyllic, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And like I say, if you want a special place to watch the Round the Island Yacht Race, that's as good a place as any, isn't it? And it's just, yeah.
Yeah, we had, this will be our fourth year, our first year of the yacht race. There was no wind and it was gloriously warm, and the first yachts came round at 4 o'clock and we'd had people booked in. They, oh, we have breakfast and watch them, and they just stayed, and then they had lunch and then they had dinner and yeah, it was a lovely atmosphere, and the coast guards were in the deck chairs eating ice cream because they had nothing to do, and yeah.
Perfect. So they were all becalmed, weren't
they?
It was a beautiful sight.
It was, yeah. And all the spinnakers up on the horizon when they eventually did come through, that was lovely. And then the next year, we had all their accidents and incidents near us. We had a ship run aground.
That's right. Yes, I saw that. But he was fine, weren't they?
Everyone was fine. There was a few head injuries. Somebody went overboard. Somebody lost a mast. Yeah, and it all just happened right in front of us.
Because it's just that point, isn't it?
Yeah, and the Coast Guards didn't have time to drink their tea, and they were rushed off their feet, backwards and forwards.
But they did wonders with that guy that came in on the rocks. And he was absolutely fine. But there were so many, you know, there were two boats, there was two land vehicles, a helicopter.
Yeah.
Everybody just kind of came out of nowhere to assist, and I say, he was absolutely fine, his crew, so it was really good. So there we go. I told you it would go in the blink of an eye. It's gone really quick.
It's gone quickly.
So thank you so much, Kerry, for coming in and talking to us.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you for listening to me.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. And please, if you love your cake, you love your sea, and you love your homemade soups and your crab sandwiches and your bacon sandwiches, do yourself a favour, just pop yourself down to the Seapot, down at Wheeler's Bay. It's a beautiful walk to get there. You'll have a lovely, it's part of a lovely day out. It's just idyllic, you know, Enid Blyton, summer holiday kind of stuff. So just kind of wish all your stresses away and just have a lovely time down there. And there's always a lovely welcome from Kerry and her brother James at the Seapot. So lovely talking to you today, and please tune in again next week. I've been Joan Ellis, and this has been Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls. Thanks again. Take care. Have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye now. www.vectisradio.com